and welcome to the 250. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Max.
And this week we watched Inception. As you may have guessed, Danielle's not here this week, so we have a male with us who's not a Hewitt also. So this is very exciting for everyone. So first off, what do you think of Inception as a whole?
Like before we watched it, like the second time since me watching it when I was 12 with my mom, or like...
Or just like in general.
Because like Inception's like, I don't know, it's like this weird phenomena of like, you said we were going to watch it and I was a little worried because like every bro whoever has talked about film to me like mentions Inception and The Godfather. So like always a little worrying, but like, so I hate to admit that I actually kind of really like Inception because like it feels stupid to say it out loud, but it's like kind of a good movie. So that's kind of how I feel
like
about
it. Like kind of a good movie. But yeah, no, that is fair. And we talk about a lot, like, how the 250 is just, like, a very dude film list. which is just kind of inescapable, because those are the people who are going on IMDb to actually review movies. But that doesn't mean the movies on the list are bad.
True.
Could be a little bit more diversity on the list as a whole. So, for those who haven't seen Inception, which you should have because this is 250, and if you're listening, you should have watched the movie. Like, Inception gets this, like, reputation that it's just, like, super hard to follow, and, like, you have to be on, like, a different level to understand what's going on. And in watching the movie, we watch it in a group setting, and one of the guys watching it with us, like, an hour and 15 maybe
in defense of our dear friend Teddy, it was not his movie nor was it his day,
but like he was one of those people, he just got up and was like, I can't do this, I don't understand, and just left. But like, I feel like it's not that hard to fall. You have to pay attention.
Yeah, no, it's a linear story. I think that's like a tough one to explain to people, but like the story, it's like point A, point B. That's like the whole motion of the story, like the general thrust of it. I don't know. But no, that's the thing though. I was like, it like kind of gets to me because, yeah, like you think about it, there's like, you know, if you haven't seen Inception, there's a bunch of dreams, different dream sequences, and the dreams happen at the same time. But it makes logical sense because it takes an hour to set up this whole dream different sequence thing. But it happens like in a very natural way, and I think Christopher Nolan, especially in his editing, mm-hmm. like definitely makes it excruciatingly clear exactly what time it is in like different. So I think like that was like one thing I would definitely commend this movie for, is like, because I have a love-hate relationship with Christopher Nolan. I'm mm-hmm. gonna admit that my first girlfriend loved Christopher Nolan, and so I think that kind of ruined every Christopher Nolan movie as a result for me. But he is so imaginative. Like, we always talk about Christopher Nolan as, like, the guy who, like, ruined superhero movies forever because he, like, thought about, like, a dark Batman movie, which is, like, stupid. Batman is dark.
Yeah, but Batman is dark, and it's, like, he's the saving grace of DC, all DC movies.
But it's, like, it's also, like, he is so imaginative. Like, the movie is literally dark, but, like, The Dark Knight and Inception are both, like, these crazy imaginative, like, writings of, like, the traditional American action movie.
Yeah.
And, like, you think about it, like, going into this movie, it's like, how did he pitch this multi-million dollar movie about, like, dreams and espionage to who made, like, Warner Brothers is who he
like,
works
probably.
With, I suppose.
Yeah.
Could look it up. But I don't know. That's, like, something I, like, kind of get to. I can't remember what the heck we started talking about and how I, like, kind of got off on this tangent. But, yeah, it was because we were talking about, like, how it was complex or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And, like, yeah, like, in a way, it's just, like, yeah, because you have this whole deluge of, like, you know, high-concept action movies now.
Yeah.
And they just don't really stack up to Inception just because it's, like, there's this, like, joy to kind of watching it all kind of unfold. Like, even if it doesn't kind of, like, hold true to all the promises the movie kind of makes itself.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's still, like, an incredible kind of, like, experience to, like, go through just kind of, like, for the spectacle of the action of it.
Yeah, just, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's, like, very visually just, like, gorgeous. Like, even from, like, some of the first scenes when Leonardo DiCaprio is in that first dream and they have to give him the quote-unquote kick to wake him back up. And he, like, they kick him... they push him over into the bathtub, and there's this slow-mo of, like, the water coming up around him, and, like, in contrast with the scene within the dream. Like, mm-hmm. it's beautiful, and then they do it again with the car scene when they mm-hmm. do the big kick to get them out of, like, the dream within the dream within the dream. Like, it's just gorgeous, but also, like, very just, like, visually, like, kind of gray. Like, there's not a lot of color. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, I don't know. I love it. But I think that's a lot of Christopher Nolan's stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I don't fault him for, like, being, you know, consistent in his, like, style. And mm-hmm. he works with, you know, a specific sect of cinematographers and editors and, like, all his movies. So I don't really fault him for that. But it's also, like, it's very easy to look at. Mm-hmm. Like, everything's very symmetrical, like, easy to, like, view, you know, individual scenes to understand what's happening. And it's also easy, like, it was edited, like, very intelligently, yeah. and that, like, exactly what you're talking about, like, you could read a scene and, like, through the, like, language of editing, you could understand that, like, cutting from the scene where they enter the water to him being a completely distinct environment, mm-hmm. like, with the water rushing into it, you don't have to know that it was necessarily a dream to yeah. know that, like, these two events were connected.
Yeah, for sure. And also something I really admire about the movie is, although, as we have said, it's, like, a very, like, dude movie or whatever, and it is this kind of, like, big grand action in your face kind of thing in some ways, it does deal with, like, themes that are very more gentle and more human, mm-hmm. Instead of just, like, getting lost in this, like, high concept idea of, like, this dream world and, like, what is like, reality and, like, all that kind of stuff. Like, there are, like, the storyline that strikes me mm-hmm. is the one of what is Leonardo DiCaprio's character's name?
Cobb.
Wow, you knew that. But we never know the name. We just called him Leonardo DiCaprio.
That Cobb, yeah, no, Cobb is like prime Leonardo DiCaprio just being himself in a movie. But
yeah, but it works every goddamn time. yeah, so the storyline of Cobb and his, I guess, late wife, and just, like, the interaction throughout the movie, and, like, one, the way that it haunts him, and two, this concept, really just, like, what, of, like, letting go, and, like, what is worth letting go of, and, like, the way that loss manifests itself, even in this man that is, like, supposedly, like, has it all together, is very intelligent, like, because in a lot of ways, like, Cobb is very in control, mm-hmm. And then it's only until, like, Ellen Page's character Ariadne,
who, listeners, you may not know, yeah. was the Greek demigod of like, mazes. So very on the nose for Christopher Nolan, but, you know, we didn't have Google as readily as we do now back yeah. in 2011. So credit That's to him true. For that one.
Yeah, all of us were just like, is it Adrian spelled wrong? but yeah, so it's not until you get these scenes with Ariadne, who, like, commits herself to figuring out what is up with Cobb, that you really see the way that he's haunted by the loss of his wife and the guilt he feels for her death. And then it also, like, her storyline just gets into the idea of, like, what is reality, and does yeah. it really matter if you're stuck in this dream world, if, like, who cares? Yeah. Like, if you're in whatever.
And I love that I was, like, just thinking about this, sitting here listening to you, like, the way, because the central thrust of, like, why the whole espionage works in is that the Cobb is being contracted to create an inception, which is, like, a thought within the competitor of like a Japanese energy manufacturer, and so they have to go on a flight with this guy, go within his dream, and make him think a specific thing. However, like, the beauty of those dream sequences is they're all centered around his loss of the father mm-hmm. and his relationship with his, like, late father, which is, like, incredible. Like, the whole setup for all of the action sequences beautifully parallels Cobb's relationship with his wife, like, yeah. late wife. Like, I don't know. Like, because I was thinking about it, and it's like, you know, this movie realistically shouldn't be an action movie because...
Yeah,
like, it doesn't really work with the themes yeah. that we're dealing
with. But,
like,
with it's here. Fun to watch.
Yeah, but, you know, but the fact that, like, he was able to kind of, like, have these, like, opposite threads where, like, I cannot remember for the life of me Cillian Murphy's character's name.
Starts with an M.
It might be Murphy, honestly. But, like, he is, like, he eventually concludes, like, because he's convinced of, like, because he's told to think this via Inception, that, like, oh, I, like, have this new understanding of my father, this new relationship, which is, like, there's this beautiful irony because it's, like, this, like, shining optimism in that sense. But then, like, Cobb's relationship with Mal is, like, not resolved by the end. Like, there's still this kind of, like, you know, it ends on that, like, oh, paradox, like, is the thing, is he in reality or not?
Where
Murphy's character, like, feels this resolution where Cobb
also
does not.
Also, I figured out Fisher had it written down.
Okay.
Got it.
Good work. Just investigative reporting.
Thank you very much. That's what we're about here at The Voice.
The Voice. Hot takes take a back seat to investigative reporting this week.
I do agree with that. But I also think it's really interesting that, in a sense, although Inception in some ways does have these, like, very, I don't want to say complicated necessarily, but, like, high concept ideas working, that relationship and that setup with Fisher is just so simple. Like, especially at the beginning. Like, was funny to me watching it this time, because I'd seen it the first time in theaters. I was, like, 11 or whatever. And I obviously wasn't really, I was like, dreams. Cool. But this time, like, it really struck me, like, at the beginning when Cobb goes to meet whatever Tom Hardy's character's name is.
Don't do this. We'll just do the actor names. We know them. It's okay.
He goes to meet with Tom Hardy, and they're, like, talking, and they're, like, very specifically talking about, like, is Inception possible, and, like, how many layers, and all these kinds of things. And then they're, like, he's, like, oh, what are we doing? And he's, like, we're trying to take down an energy company. Like, it's very basic and very just, like, and then, like, even the idea of, like, what they're basing it out of is this man's relationship with his father. It's just, like, very much like rich people don't have good familial ties, like, you know, like, it's like a very basic, very like cliched storyline, but it works because everything else is so much more than that. And they do work on, like, taking it from this, like, almost, like, pretty much cliche idea and then turning it into this, like, sweet and tender and thoughtful development of Fisher's character, especially in that end scene. But something I do take issue with is you have that end scene where they're in the final layer of the dream, and they're like, this is the last step to plant the idea into his head. And, like, the finishing touch is, like, what Fisher thought his father said to him, or thinks his father said to him, on his deathbed, is that, like, I'm essentially disappointed in you.
Right.
But what they switch it to is, like, I'm disappointed that you're trying to be me, or whatever it is. But, like, for me, I was just like, but this is all fake. Like, what did the father actually say? Like, they still have this bad relationship. And they also, like, almost, like, destroyed his relationship with this godfather, who is the one man who, like, he actually has in his life. So you're like, I don't know how, like, how resolved I feel in this. Because, well, this poor guy just gets taken advantage of.
Yeah, no. that was inevitably going to be the consequence. And that kind of, like, they do, I mean, but, like, in the same sense that they do kind of explore that idea as well. Like, with the same thing with Mal, that, like, there's this, like, the big twist, if you, I guess you really call it twist, it's, like, very signaled. But is that Cobb plant an idea within his wife's head, which had her disbelieve in the reality that they were trapped in, and eventually leads to her suicide. So I guess it kind of, like, in that sense, because it would, there would kind of be this dissonance if, like, everything just played out accordingly, if Murphy's character was just gonna live this happy life with that, like, because they warn everyone at the very beginning, right before any of the dream sequence happen, is that these little ideas can manifest and, like, take over your whole personality, just like they do with Mal or Cobb or etc. And so I guess, like, that is probably a fair point, that, like, you know, Murphy's character is not gonna come away from this cleanly in any way, shape, or form.
And that is, like, he's the only one really, because something I was also thinking about while watching it is, like, usually when you watch these action movies and you have those, like, essentially throwaway characters, like the random civilian that you don't know the name of that just like dies, and like a lot, 100 people die, but they're faceless and nameless and you don't really care. Mm. What I like about this is like you don't have to feel that, you don't have to think about that, because right. everything's in a dream. You're like, ah, there's no consequences, they're just projections anyway, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. But then you're like, damn, Fisher's the only one who's coming out hurt from this, because everyone else pretty much comes out scot-free mm-hmm. when you think about it, except for the Japanese business owner. What's his name? I don't know. The Japanese business owner does spend like 50 years in limbo, which is rough.
I truly don't know. yeah. No, I think that might be cheap movie making by starting with that and ending with that because it seems deep. But yeah. because, yeah, didn't that feel a little unnecessary?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Am I just stupid? Or like, because it feels like why would you betray the linearity of your story
yeah.
just for this like meetup between Leo and that actor?
Yeah, it really doesn't make much sense. Especially because it messes with, I think we talked about, or like you talked about this a little bit after we watched it. It does mess with like the rules that they've set up for this yeah, landscape.
That's my biggest issue with well, that's the thing, is like this movie should not be an action movie, because so right before they get into the whole sequence of like setting up these long dreams, is they had to contract a what do you call it, what was the Indian guy's job,
the chemist,
yeah, he was a chemist, he had to create like very specific sedatives so that they could like be asleep for a very long time, mm-hmm. deep enough that they wouldn't be woken up by like violence or something like mm-hmm. that. And the implications that they go through like right before everything starts is that they would be asleep for greater and greater amounts of time, deeper and deeper into the layers, so that they'd be living out like a week in the first layer and like several months in the second layer and years in the third layer. Mm-hmm. And so you get into that and you're super excited because you're like, wow, like how could they possibly, you know, live out entire lifetimes in these little worlds.
Yeah.
But instead, the first thing that happens when they get into the first world is immediately throw that all away. Leonardo DiCaprio's subconscious, like, enters the dream world, and suddenly, like, they're on a time crunch.
Yeah.
Which is, like, obviously, like, necessary if it's going to be an action movie, because yeah. there needs to be a form of pressure to, yeah. like, drive the narrative. But it's, like, you could have teased out, like, so many more things by, like, yeah, actually exploring what it would have been to these people to have their realities, like, messed with by yeah. living in these, like, yeah, I don't
for,
know.
For extended periods of time. And it's also, you don't see, like, even in Leonardo DiCaprio's character, who does spend, like, the however many years in limbo.
Yeah.
His wife has issues with it, but that's because of the idea he planted in her head about, mm-hmm. like, reality. But, like, he just kind of is like, all right, cool. Like, you know, yeah. like, he's never, like, scarred by
yeah,
that, or you never see that.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, like, we get this whole thing, like, oh, he's living this awful life. Because every night, he essentially, like, puts himself under and yeah. has those dreams. But that seems to be the only bad thing, and that seems to mostly be a result of his wife's suicide,
yeah.
not actually anything that's
having
ever happened to
having lived this life already,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is wild. Maybe he just loves his kids that much. Like, that's the only explanation that they show you.
That makes no sense. Yeah, or the fact that none... Like, the only character who really seems to have any remorse or, like, reaction to going under so frequently is Ariadne.
Yeah.
Which, like, makes sense because she's obviously the most sympathetic character to the audience because mm-hmm. she's, like, the new inductee to
yeah.
this
also,
dreamscape.
Max, she's a woman, so she has to be affected by these things.
It's true. Women, yeah, they feel
we're
emotions.
Fragile souls, folks.
It's true. Did you think Tom Hardy was going to be the one doing all the feeling around here?
I would have been into it, honestly. Just like Bane being like...
Oh, my.
I'm great. Tom Hardy can do whatever he wants in movies.
Tom
it's fine.
Tom Hardy, it is so unfortunate. He's so attractive. And he's also, I don't know, does he play a wide dynamic range of characters? Because it seems like he just gets meatier and meatier.
I'm okay with it, though.
No,
okay, all I can think of is this movie and Dark Knight. That's all I can think of.
He was also Bronson in a movie, but that was like the meatiest he ever was.
I don't know, Tom. But like this cast is like a pretty great cast.
I mean, yeah, it's basically like Christopher Nolan was like, hey, do you remember that movie we worked on together? Do you just want to do it again? To like everyone he's ever worked with.
Yeah. Yeah, you have Leonardo DiCaprio, you have Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which just made me miss Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Now he does LG phone commercials, and we're all like, why are you doing this? Why aren't they hiring you? You did Third Rock from the Sun. You don't have to do this.
Oh, how the great have fallen. You have Ellen Page, top 10 lesbian of all time.
It's true.
Although, what has she been in recently?
Doesn't matter. She did Juno. And that made me think about having a child at 16. So, like, it's, you know, she's been in some important movies.
Yeah, you know, a whole generation of kids were like, you know what? Just say no, kids. Just because of Juno. She does Gaycation on Viceland, which is a pretty good show.
All right.
But it's, like, not acting. She just, like, visits countries.
She did motion capture for a mediocre video game 2 years ago.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
The most recent thing that I know she's been in.
Yeah, she's been in some great Instagram posts with her fiance or wife now. I don't know, but right. they're really cute.
They got married.
They're married.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Ellen Page. She's a big listener of the 250.
Got it.
She'll be tweeting at us later. Don't
if
worry.
If only. I just want to be there. I would like to be adopted by Ellen Page and her.
Yeah, I'd be into it. Even though I'm over 18.
Doesn't matter. I'd be an indentured servant, I suppose, at that point. But I could live with the ramifications of that one.
Worth it. Yeah, for sure. let's see. What else did I have to say about this? Also, this is just really random at this point because we haven't touched on this at all. So that first scene when they're in the dream within a dream with the, like, Japanese mogul.
Yes.
Or whatever he is, entrepreneur.
Please look up his name. I'll stall when you look it up.
Okay.
So in the meantime, yeah. I actually love that scene because the... Firstly, it introduces Maul, his wife who is dead, like, as a character.
Mr. Sato. Okay,
Mr.
Continue.
Sato. Okay, thank you for doing that. I felt really bad about just saying the Japanese guy every
time.
Yeah. I was like, goodness gracious, could we please remember people's names who aren't white once? but yeah, because that scene is beautiful. Two reasons. Like, it introduces her as a character, like, without the strings of, like, her being, like, this thing to dangle over him. Mm-hmm. But there's also, like, the implication that she, like, knows things that, like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, like, doesn't quite know. Or mm-hmm. that, like, she's, like, this thing that's dangerous to Cobb. Which is, like, A, beautiful setup for the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Because you're suspicious of her the entire time. But B, she, like, points out the little thing about, like, the British artwork.
Yeah.
And it's, like, so subtle. Because, like, so what happens... is that Maul and Cobb are talking in a room together right before Cobb is, like, supposed to go to bed. And on the wall is a piece of, like, post-war British artwork in this, like, Japanese temple, more or less. So it obviously stands out. It would not stand out initially to the viewer because it's a dream. So everything kind of just fits together, and it makes sense on the wall. But Maul points it out, and she's like, isn't this your partner's taste? Mm-hmm. And it introduces you to this idea of, like, these are people's dreams that they own, and it's filled with their subconscious. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, just a very subtle piece that I enjoy a lot.
Yeah.
And that was me stalling, so go ahead.
No, it's really random. But the scene, so they're in the apartment, so it's, like, the second layer of the dream.
Yes.
And Sato... is when they, like, push him over and he, like, puts his face on the ground and he's like, my carpet is whatever.
It's
like,
wool. Yeah, it's wool and this is polyester.
And I was like, no one knows that. No one does that.
Well, okay, in defense of the logic of that, I'm doing a lot of defending of this movie. I'm going to be honest, I have a lot of, like, little complaints about this movie, like, that are more than just, like, narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But... like, in defense of that, I feel like that one's, like, appropriate because, like, the suggestion is that, like, he'd, like, been in a dream before.
That's
so
true.
He reasonably would try to remember the details of his living space in case people tried to mimic it.
I guess.
But that's also, like, kind of a long shot.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are definitely a number of other ways he could have noticed something wrong about the walls. Or something.
Exactly. Instead of, like, I know my fabric, sir.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much time you spend laying on the ground with your cheek next to your carpet, but I do that often enough to know the difference between wool and polyester.
And also, what you remind me of when you're talking about the scene with Maul, and she, like, mentions the artwork. Mm-hmm. I think this movie, from, like, a gender perspective, is pretty interesting because the women in it are the only ones who seem to have that awareness for like the human condition, to a certain extent. Because I feel like we touched on this, but like Ariadne is the only one who actually cares about like what's going on in Cobb's head, whereas Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, one moment Arthur, like he's his partner, he's the one who's supposed to be able to look out for him. They're supposed to be like, you know, they're supposed to be a well-oiled machine, but he just like brushes it off as like, oh, it's fine, because he's a man.
He just does that.
Yeah, like, there's just this woman who's going to, like, attack us and everything, but it's fine. Don't worry about it. But, like, that's ridiculous. Like, that's so ridiculous to me that everyone else is just like, we'll be fine. He's Cobb. He can control it, when clearly he can't, because, like, that's not how emotion works, you know?
I actually love that, because it's like, wow, what a beautiful metaphor for what it's like to work with toxic masculinity. It's like all these guys just carrying this emotional baggage around, like, violently, and you're just, like, there, like,
at the risk of everyone's lives.
I suppose this is fine.
Yeah, which is just so interesting to me, because, like, Ariadne is, like, the only, I guess, protagonist female character. And then you have Maul, who's, like, a protagonist almost in her own way, but, like, in a more convoluted sense. But, yeah, I just think it's really interesting that, like, that's how that's portrayed. And I want to know, I wonder if that was intentional.
I don't know. Like, intentional or not? Like, I mean, like, you could remove, like, the gender aspect of, like, it would not be wise to, but you could. Because Ariadne is, like, the only one who, like, more or less fears for her mortality. Like, and in part, like, you could suggest that that is because she'd not experienced, like, kind of, like, the, like, disillusionment with reality. So she had a very firm grasp that if she dies, she dies. Like, most of us do, I suppose. Well, not most of us, but you know what I'm saying. That, you're not long for this world. That she believes. And I don't know, maybe that is just kind of, like, this workplace hazard that these guys go through. Like, if you're working in, like, a land of fantasy constantly, you kind of lose this hold on, like, I'm gonna die.
Like, that's a thing that can happen. especially as if you die in a dream, you just wake up.
Yeah.
It's like, that's that friend. That's not how it works all the time.
No.
But I think for a character like Cobb, it makes a bit more sense. Like, for him, I think, almost to a certain extent, this life isn't worth living if he's not with his family in America. So, like, he's willing to risk, because he's like, I'd rather just die trying than never try at all.
I have to say, like, what a little good bit of, like, narrative setup to have him have a singular goal that is, like, abstract enough that you could basically say it's, like, whatever goodness you want.
Yeah.
But also, like, specific enough that anyone could understand, like, slick, why he would want to, like, to pursue that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just kind of, like, because, A, like, the whole, like, the most commonly repeated scene in the whole movie is his little kids not looking at him.
Which I also, can I just say, I think is hilarious that they just hired these two kid actors to just crouch and run away in various places.
Leonardo DiCaprio. I know. Yeah. If I was a kid that old, I'd be like, Leonardo DiCaprio, what are you doing here? Interesting that you are on my Huggies commercial set. But yeah, because, like, I was going somewhere. It removes the reality of the situation that you could relate to Cobb in that, like, him having this, like, single goal kind of, like, takes the reality out of what he's doing. Like, he hasn't been to America in years. He hasn't seen his children in years. And so it's this thing where, like, you know, you finally get to the end and there's this resolution. He sees his kids, but it's, like, unclear if it's reality or not. And obviously for Cobb, it doesn't matter anymore because, like, he only had one goal. Like, the real world or not, he just wanted to see his kids. It was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, what are the implications of that? Like, if it's... okay, one, I do think it's the real world. Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't buy the suspense at the end. And it wobbles. Like, it doesn't wobble when it's... like, whatever. Anyway.
But, like, the point is that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, oh, but the poor kids. Like, if it's not reality, they're still living without their father. But, like, does that matter? Like, are they going to be fine? They have their grandparents.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, they seem well enough to,
like,
me.
Yeah, like, Latina, like, houseworker who answered the phone, ignored Leonardo DiCaprio. There you go.
Yeah, that's all you need in this life.
Representation.
People. at its finest, honestly.
And
I think, okay, yeah. So do you have anything else to add?
No. Inception, pretty good movie. It's that consensus.
Pretty good. How do you feel about it, like, being 14 on the list? Do you think higher, lower? What do you think, Max?
IMDb is hilarious. I can't... Do people, like, link their, like, IMDb ratings to their Tinder profiles? They're like, why do people do this? I always think about that.
I think they should, honestly.
Like, social currency. Like, hey, Mom, look at that. Shawshank Redemption, I made it the best movie of all time. I don't know.
So you... Do you think it should be? No. It shouldn't be on this list at all.
There should not be a Christopher Nolan movie in the top, like, 25.
Okay, remotely. I could see not top 25, but I think within the 250 there should be at least one Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah, and it should probably be, like, Inception or The Prestige. Like, those are his, like...
Do you want to know what Christopher Nolan movies are in the top 25?
Are they all of them? Because I would guess that they are all of them.
It's just 10 through 20. let's see here. Googling is hard.
Ooh, I know, this is very captivating for listeners. The sound of, although I suppose if you're just listening to this for like the like oddly satisfying ASMR-ness of it, like you should probably type a little closer to the mic.
Yeah, I try and like cast my net wide for the viewership.
Sure, you get film bros, but not film bros because we're mocking them. So I guess people who hate film bros and then like five people who have like exhausted the entire internet for all ASMR resources.
So we've got The Dark Knight.
Uh-huh.
Let's see, within the top 25. Dark Knight. Oh, Inception's 11. I thought it was 14. Mm. Wow. It should not be 11. 11's so
Inception's
high.
Inception's certainly a top 10 movie.
Wow, 11. Let's see. I don't think there are any more in the top 25. Interstellar, 21.
Interstellar, that's funny. That's kind of a funny one to put it 21.
Yeah, I'm not a big Interstellar fan.
No, I don't think anyone is. I don't know.
We all just pretend like we are.
I don't know. Like, Interstellar is actually a movie that I would accept if someone was like, I didn't get it. Because, like, that's fair.
Yeah.
No. We're not going to talk about other Christopher Nolan movies because then we would just keep talking forever and also mocking the audience because I feel like most people actually like these movies because they're pretty good.
They are pretty good.
That's the thing.
I just don't know if he deserves to be 3 of 25.
Oh, certainly not. But the thing is like, I will respect Christopher Nolan because, like, he... well, the thing is like, I love what he does. Like, the way he subverts, like, expectations. Like, the way he, like, subverted, like, war dramas with Dunkirk. It was, yeah, like, beautiful. Dunkirk is a beautiful movie. I like that movie. But it's like, now we're just gonna get a bunch of, like, bad, like, dinky war movies.
Yeah, because everyone's not
years.
Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. So it's like, I guess, like, that's kind of, like, the downfall of, like, liking Christopher Nolan is kind of, like, the implication he has for, like, the rest of us. So now we have to deal with, like, Justice League movies that suck.
Yeah. Although, you know, shout out to Wonder Woman.
Shout out to Wonder Woman.
Really the only good DC movies at this point are Dark Knight and Wonder Woman.
I will stan Watchmen. Okay, I like that movie. But also, Watchmen's not a great movie either, so it's like an unfair standing. But
Oh, wow. I just realized Wonder Woman's never going to be on the 250, and that's deeply upsetting to me.
I don't know, people could come around and they could think, hey, strong women are cool, you know.
I don't see that happening anytime soon, honestly.
It's true. But, the internet is also not forever, nor is IMDb. But it's here for a while, so maybe in the future people will like a okay war drama about World War One.
How
we're not gonna
dare
get into
you?
Wonder Woman hot takes, though.
Wow. Okay, fine, whatever. I'm just saying. Patty Jenkins deserves all the praise. God, what a movie. Anyway, okay, let's pick next week's movie.
So excited.
Number 54.
54, that seems pretty innocuous.
Let's see.
It can't possibly be something ridiculous.
I'm hoping something within the last 50 years. We've got, I have to, next page. 54.
I never go to the next
Doctor
page.
Strangelove. or How I Stopped Learning.
Actually,
Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. I've never seen it.
Are you kidding me? It's like,
ooh, it's a comedy.
It's like one of Stanley Kubrick's like first greats. It's like that, and then the like war one he did about World War One, Passive Glory, I think it's called. Like those are his like first two, like him breaking out.
I think this is. I've never seen a Stanley Kubrick movie in my life.
You've never seen like The Shining? I feel like.
No.
Wow.
I don't do horror.
Good work. Welcome to Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah, okay, I'm excited. It's a nice quick watch, 95 minutes.
Yeah, I like, in defense of this movie, like, most comedies from that era are not funny. Like, it just, like, comedy does not translate well across borders or across time periods.
Yeah.
That movie is still quite funny. I don't know why it works, but it's pretty good.
All right, sweet. Okay, so next week it will not... Max will be not here. It'll be Danielle again. But, you know, thank you for coming, Max.
Yep, I had lots of fun sitting here for however long.
I don't know.
Easy to lose track of time when you're just delivering hot takes about a movie from 5 years ago.
So, yes, you can listen to more of the 250 and all of the Voices podcasts on the Voice website. And we always try and come up with lists of where podcasts are. But just wherever you listen to podcasts, search the Voice, Georgetown Voice 250. Probably find it. We're all good podcasts are streamed. Also, if you're listening to this right now, you've already done it. Well done. You're here. I have no social media, but you can follow Georgetown Voice on Twitter. You can like our Facebook page. Do you have any social media you'd like to get that promo for?
No, I'm not going to promo my Don't follow me on social media. Do not look me up, actually. That is my suggestion. Please.
Okay. All right. Thanks for listening, and we will not see you guys. Talk to you guys next week with Dr. Strangelove. Bye.